We're all set to. Excellent, thank you. Can I get a call to order? We'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
7:02 p.m.
Pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Can we get a roll call, please?
Ms. DeGennaro?
Here.
Ms. Dugato? Ms. Domsky?
Here.
Mr. Coppola? He just came in, so maybe he's connected. Mr. Coppola? Mr. Coppola? No? Okay, Mr. DiGiovanni?
Here.
Mr. Sill?
Here.
Mr. Hyder?
Here.
Mr. Sampson? Mr. Sampson? Mr. Shockey?
Here.
Mr. Coppola?
Here.
Okay. Right. Record should reflect you have 7 present.
All right. We'll call public portion. Anybody from the public like to speak? Anybody from the public would like to speak? Third and last call.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to speak.
Good.
My name is Mark Garfalo, 95 Academy Hill Road. I'm town clerk. I served as a member of this board, as a member of the tax board, and I served as mayor in the city of Derby. I just wanted to speak on a couple items on the agenda because the public has a right to know, and I would encourage more clarity on these agendas going forward so that people know exactly, including the board members, know exactly what it is that is going to be discussed at these meetings. So I'll start in order. So, just on the number 5, the lease of O'Sullivan's Island. I would just ask the board to, I think it's a great concept to have this concept of the kayaking and so forth on the river. I think that just 3 or 4 days ago, you were being asked to approve a lease for property that the city didn't even own. So, I think it's important that that you ask all the questions that need to be asked with respect to O'Sullivan's Island. And just to remind everyone that the O'Sullivan's Island, since June 16th of 1999, has been listed on the state DEP list with significant environmental hazards, pollution in the top 2 feet of soil that may pose a human health risk as a result of direct contact. This is right from their website. Pollution detected in groundwater that discharges to a surface water body may pose a risk to aquatic life. DEP did direct the property owner, which is the city, to submit a plan to eliminate the risk. And DEP directed the property to submit a report of actions taken to prevent access to the polluted soil and submit a plan to evaluate the potential risk to surface water. In 2009, the city brought in EPA to do partial reimbursement, but it says right here on the state standards, additional abatement action is necessary for the remaining impacted soil area covered with 1 foot of clean soil. And in their frequently asked questions, it says polluted soil, a significant environmental hazard exists when there is polluted soil present within 2 feet of the surface with potential to pose a direct contact. So, and we know that area floods out all the time. So I just be careful because the agreement as posted for the public to see does not show where the kayaks will be launched. So I think it's unfair to the proponent to not have done the due diligence on the city side of this. So I just encourage you to make sure that you ask the questions and address these things that need to be addressed to protect the public from environmental contamination. So thank you for that. Regarding the Greenway Lighting project, I know this just came to you, and there are two documents that came. So there's two different amounts. So just ask that, you know, that we know the people, the public can't comment if we don't know where this money is being proposed to come from or what it is. And that's not apparent from the documents that are there. And then final, just for the a purpose of clarity, with respect to the Sterling Opera House Committee, as a longtime supporter of the initiative to renovate the Sterling Opera House as a working theater, I think it's a great endeavor. You have a certain amount of names before you tonight, but I would just, what I don't see, and I have mentioned privately before, but I just want to, for the record, to know, to understand what is the scope of this committee, what are their responsibilities, what are the reporting obligations, and what are they expected to do? There is no ordinance on the books talking about this, which typically would regulate this kind of thing. So I'd ask you just to take that into consideration as you go forward in that endeavor.
Thank you, Mark. Anybody else from the public? Anybody else from the public? Third and last call. All right, hearing none, I'm going to close that session. I see Kelly Curtis on there. Kelly, I did get another person for the board, just to let you know. Number five, Scoot and Paddle. The lease of O'Sullivan's Island, a discussion of possible action. We had vetted this out last Thursday. I get a motion to accept. We go into discussion.
Mr. Mayor, John Marini, Corporation Counsel's Office.
Yes.
I just want to kick off the conversation. Last week, obviously, we brought this draft lease before the board for the first time. For the purpose of clarification, we came into that meeting knowing full well after research that Hogs Island was not owned by the city. It was a matter of discussion. And fortunately, we had a meeting soon after this meeting to be able to wrap up loose ends. The draft that you have before you, as we discussed, no longer features Hog Island. It restricts it to O'Sullivan's Island, which was actually the initial proposal by Scoot and Paddle. Scoot and Paddle has put forth a proposal originally that shows exactly where on O'Sullivan's Island they would operate. But of course, if there is any concern, we could work with Scoot and Paddle to specifically designate an area that the Board of Aldermen feels comfortable with. I think that's more than reasonable. In terms of contamination issues, we know that these issues lie beneath the soil. I think that a caveat on the agreement that there be no intrusive activity that goes into the soil, nothing that permeates the barrier that was concerned about, can certainly be included. However, Scoot and Paddle is not suggesting any activity that would violate that top layer of topsoil whatsoever. It's being used essentially for passive recreation. That is exactly the nature of the business that Scoot and Paddle is engaging in. And we do know that O'Sullivan's Island is clear pursuant to the state, the EPA, specifically, right, the federal government, for passive recreational use, which is exactly what this use will be. But if, again, we'd like to go even further and obtain something very specific from a licensed environmental professional stating that this use is passive recreational and it certainly does not violate the environmental restrictions. There is no ELR, environmental land use restrictions. There does not seem to be any on this property. That's what I endeavored to find out for this board last week, if there was a use restriction and to make sure we were staying within the boundaries of it. But it doesn't appear NVCOG has not been able to locate any such ELR at this time. But still, we could approve the agreement contingent on a stipulation that nothing permeate the soil.
Attorney Marie, so on Thursday, we talked about contacting DEEP and, getting their, blessing of sorts. On this usage and passive recreation versus as you know, Mr. Garofalo noted, you know, flooding and how that erodes. Like, have we lost that soil that's been put on top? Like, do we know, is there quarterly testing that continues to get done to confirm that we are, you know, under the state regulated action levels for PCBs? You know,
yeah, all of the above, you know. Yeah, I don't believe there's any active concern whatsoever that the site has any issues above surface. And that's exactly what the use being proposed is. It's above surface. Again, I could get a written statement from either, you know, the professionals at NVCOG or our own licensed environmental professional, if that puts the board's mind at ease, and of course, the public's mind at ease, and we could append that to the agreement. But in terms of initiating more testing, I mean, I wouldn't go beyond what EPA or DEEP has already put in place upon their remediation of the site.
I'll make a motion to okay it then, pending no ground penetration and a written okay from VCOG.
I got Ron for us.
I'll second it.
Who's that?
Gino DiGiovanni.
Hold on, guys. This is Brian Capola speaking. I'd also just, I know, Mr. Marini, you mentioned it before, but make sure that in that contingency, that they are aware of the usage of scoot and paddle, the traffic areas, and potential launch areas. I know that's way too much to put in the motion, but I'm just saying, just making sure that they know exactly, yep, you know, where the launch sites are and where the traffic is going to be, foot traffic, that is.
No, I think you're exactly right. I want to convey to whoever's giving the opinion an exact description of what's happening, whether it be a storage container, whether it be a launching pad. I want them to know exactly what's happening so that the opinion has value.
Great. Okay.
Are there any LEPs in NVCOG?
We work with LEPs, and NVCOG obviously has a range of environmental professionals that they work with on a regular basis for this sort of project.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're going to an actual LEP. Again, my day to day, I work at an environmental lab, so I'm, you know, testing this stuff daily, and see a lot of, different contamination in different sites, whatnot. So, you know, safety is, and getting that approval and seal of safety is of utmost importance to me.
Absolutely.
Any other discussion?
All right. No, yes, it's Barbara. I alluded to the other night because we weren't going to be taking any action, but, you know, I had some concerns, you know, and having served on the Board of Aldermen in 2009, after 2009, when the DOJ came in, with regard to the area down there, I'm a little skeptical with liability to the city, and as well as what could exposure to the public. But be that as it may, you know, a couple things with this agreement. There's no Exhibit A. So we don't even know specifically the site. We don't know where it's going to be launched, where there's still activity in the licensing agreement that is not allowed on the Riverwalk. You know, again, it's a wonderful area. I use the Riverwalk, but I feel that the city of Derby always seems to be the one who, to individuals, they make money off of the city. We don't get money in. It's another stress upon our police, our fire, our EMS, our rescue services. There's no hours listed in here. I think somebody asked her, Ms. Pritchard last week, what the hours were going to be. You know, there's vendor permit. It's in the agreement. You know, there's other things besides getting vendor permit, taking care of doing the things that need to be done that are required by the city. And, you know, one of the other things, too, and it's the last thing I'll say, is Article 9 talks about if there any notices have to be given to the city, they're given to the chief of staff by this agreement. It should be the mayor. I mean, it's just the mayor signing the document. The notice should come on behalf of the city. That should go to the mayor. But, you know, at this point, I still see it as a liability to the city. I'm not convinced with information that we have that this is a go yet for May. So.
Anybody else from discussion?
I just want to say, Mr. Go ahead.
But just one thing that was discussed in Exhibit B, just to make sure that the electric scooters, just making sure that those, I believe it was said that those are not allowed on the Riverwalk.
Mr. Mayor, it's Gino DiGiovanni. On Thursday's meeting, the hours of operation, I got my notes, were 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's what I have in my notes. So,
yes, I think, you know, I think she's saying it's not in the listed in the contract.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry then.
So, I hear those concerns and also Alderman DeGennaro's concerns. I think, with respect, first of all, there is a provision in there that this business has to obey all city laws and all state laws, regardless of what they have proposed to do. At the same time, I think amending Schedule B to remove the scooters makes sense, and also putting in the hours, if that's okay with the Board of Aldermen, because remember, they proposed 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., but really this board needs to have that say, right? But I think now would be an excellent time to put in those hours into the Schedule B, and of course, I'll take out the scooters. But remember, there's that safety provision. If anything they want to do is conflicting otherwise with the law of the city or the state, they're not going to get away with that. They're going to have to follow the rules and regulations that we have in place, or else come back to you for some sort of a waiver. So I'm not too concerned about that. In terms of liability, again, there's liability language in the agreement for the cities and residents' protection. And in terms of the exact location, I could put the location map that was given as part of that Schedule B too, because I know Scoot and Paddle did include that designated area of operation in their materials. And of course, this has to otherwise comply with all other rules of the city, including zoning, right? So if this is going to be something that works, they're going to have to be able to get any approvals they would need to get through planning and zoning or any other licensing or certification within the city. They're not exempt from that just because this is a go. It's going to be contingent on those approvals.
And Mark, just a note that Charles Sampson has joined us.
Yes, I noted it was 7:12 when he came in.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All right, hearing none, call to order a vote. All in favor for Scoot and Paddle?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye, Barbara.
Can we just make sure we know exactly what it said, because there are amendments that were added in. What is the motion?
John, can you say the motion for us, please?
I would say if it's a motion to approve, I would do that with the condition that, number one, we have documentation from an environmental professional, licensed environmental professional, in terms of the usage of the property being in compliance with the environmental restrictions, if any, right? That's number one. Number two, that Schedule B be amended to A, take out scooters, B, or electric scooters, and B, include hours of operation, no more than 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. per day. And number three, to attach to Schedule B the site designation that the applicant has proposed. Right. And of course, this is all with the understanding that this is contingent on approvals from land use and any other certification or approval process within the city of Derby.
I think those are good. And also, I think Barbara's comment about Section 9, it should be the mayor, not the chief of staff, as he's signing these contracts.
That wasn't really intended to be the mayor's office with his contact. So if we just want to say the mayor, I have no objection to that.
Okay.
All right, Ron, all good with that?
Yep, so broken.
Okay, just, Gino.
Mr. Mayor, I just had one question here, just for the record. So is there a Schedule A or no?
The Schedule A is just marked the legal description. So that's just going to be the legal description off of the, the land records. It's just a matter of making sure I like to, with all leases, include the description of what that property is. But that map is going to highlight where, exactly where the operation will take place.
All right. It's Barbara. It's Tony Marini. Yeah. Page one, it calls it the site. To use a designated space on the agreement, use designated space. Oh. And it's referred to as site. And then it says it's attached as
okay.
Attached
so that,
A.
So that site map there. Can go That's as A. One of the things. Yeah, that site map can go as A then as well.
Ron.
But that site map is different because it includes Hog Isle. That I'm just trying to make sure that we have.
I believe their original one included O'Sullivan's Island only. And if not, they'll have to they'll create one that features only O'Sullivan's Island.
Okay. And just I was writing notes when this started. Mr. Sill's original motion said of approval of VCOG. So I just want to make sure.
I would say, to be more specific, we want a licensed environmental professional because to Madam President's point, I just don't want to, somebody from NVCOG. I want to make sure this is a licensed environmental professional that gives us the opinion, whether it be from NVCOG or whether it be our own licensed environmental professional.
So I guess that's the question. Is it a VCOG LEP or a local LEP?
I would just say an LEP. I mean, I think we could agree that if we have, I'm going to try to go through NVCOG and use one of theirs. But I think if a licensed environmental professional puts their name to a certification, that would be sufficient.
Mr. Mayor, I'll take down my second so Ronnie could, we could adjust.
All right, Ron, so you're good with all that?
Yeah, I just said VCOG because they've been so familiar with that.
Right. All right, so Gino.
I'm fine with the changes. Yep.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
Aye, Barbara.
Okay, hearing none. Other?
No, I had
seven to one.
I opposed, Mayor. Did he hear me?
Yeah, I did hear you. So
did
besides
okay,
you,
right,
Ms.
Okay.
Ms. No, besides you, I got okay. seven all to right. one, I think, right? Yeah. All right, so that's carried. Tina, thank you. Good luck on the scoot and paddle. Look forward to you guys being out there.
Thank you.
Number six, Greenway lighting and security presentation. Roger.
Right, and from when we were together on Thursday, I've been doing some work with the various suppliers, Penn Globe primarily. And we built up, as was requested, I think it was by Sarah, kind of the major cost areas that would go into the Connecticut Communities Challenge Grant application that is due by the 3rd of May. And you probably recall that the grant eligibility has a minimum of $1 million and a match of 25% for a distressed community. Which is what we are in Derby. So I put it together, and then we recognized that we had included a cost for removing and replacing the wooden fence with the kind of metal fence structure that Penn Globe showed to us on Thursday. However, as we all know, the fence is on both sides of the levee, so. You see the first one, which we sent out accidentally, showed wooden fence replacement for 2 miles. You needed to double that because it's on both sides. So the estimated total project cost, you can see is 1.5 million. So it gets us into the realm of the grant requirement. And then if we look at a Derby match then of 300,000 instead of 250,000, as we talked on Thursday, that would leave a grant request of 1.2 million. So it gets us, within the scope and eligibility of the grant. The timing is essentially we're looking for approval from the Board of Elders in Ottawa to submit this grant request and to have as a potential match from our ARPA funds, $300,000. I'm happy to go through the details. The big one is rebuilding and making safe the Greenway Bridge, which we've done a lot of work on. Then the supply and installation of the solar lighting. And there's some detail on how far apart they will be, how many of them will be needed. Then, as we discussed, adding security cameras. And we're looking at probably one between every sort of three lights. And they will be connected by Wi-Fi to a central, essentially a security source that we decide is appropriate. The wooden fence we just talked about, the security lighting under the bridge, because as UI has some power lines there, we can actually have sort of more like flood lighting under the bridge in the parking area, which is a, more of a kind of a nuisance than crime scene. So that is in there. And finally, Public Works are responsible for removing invasive plants on the levees. There are a number of that on both sides, as you've probably seen. And the Army Corps of Engineers have actually asked us to get those removed. So we've put in 50,000 into the total to take care of that. That leaves us with a grant request of 1.2 million and a match of 300,000.
That 50,000, Roger, would that go into the Public Works budget?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, by the time when the grant comes, we can essentially allocate it as we choose to. I mean, some of it will be purchase parts, some will be installation work, and obviously the fence and putting up that is installation work. The electrical security lighting would be put up by the electrical contractor, and then, you know, Public Works could take care of the removing the invasive plants.
Thank you.
Roger, I only have, I'm not sure when the match of 300,000 was sent. I printed off one you sent today with 250.
Right, that's that has the wooden fence with 2 miles of it.
And so, okay. And so what is the change? It's just the wooden fence is just another. Fence. Okay.
Yeah, we moved that up and added essentially 250 to that, which brought the total up to where it is. And then, you know, 25% of what we're requesting is the 300,000.
And that would be the entire fence, not just yes. Where the poles would be.
All the way around, we're removing the entire fence and putting in an aluminum fence. It'll be powder coated, much as we saw on Thursday. And it would link up all the fence posts, and then the lighting posts would be the ones that you saw that would go up and then have the solar lighting on top of them.
So that's different than what we discussed on Thursday, correct, Roger? Because initially on Thursday, we said the only posts that were going to be replaced were the ones that were going to hold the new lights. Now they're all going to be replaced.
Right. I couldn't hear that too well, but the number of lights are a function, you know, of the essentially the power of illumination and the height of the light above the river wall. They've put that together, and that's how they came up with their estimate of 350,000 for the solar lighting installed on top of the poles. So that's the poles and the lighting comes to 350. And then the wooden fence is additional all the way around.
This is Barbara. Roger, I just, you know, seeing the numbers, but the only comment I'm going to make at this point is that last week's agenda and this week's agenda, I don't think it is clear to the board or to the public that now we're looking for the money to through a grant. You know, it's not definitely not clear on the agenda. And I didn't hear ARPA, you know, the numbers change, you know, today. I think I only saw one email. I saw the second email. I couldn't even read it today. It was just whatever time it came by the time I got to it. But that's just my only comment.
Right. I mean, it's always been the intention to use this Communities Challenge Grant, which is only available to distressed communities, really, as Barbara, oh. as sorry, as as Marcia mentioned at our meeting on Thursday. So it's an opportunity to essentially get a grant that is sort of targeting at distressed communities. And, you know, the challenge is it's $1 million minimum. So, you know, what we've had to do is essentially bundle the repair of the Greenway Bridge and the lighting and the cameras and the fence and the invasive plants to bring it to that threshold. The range which you can apply for in this particular grant is between 1 million and 10 million. Obviously, the higher you go, the less your chances, because, you know, the smaller numbers tend to get selected.
Can we add in there the removal of the invasive plants at Wittig Park while we're at it?
Yes. Sure, sure. I don't have a number for it, but, you know,
those aren't invasive, unfortunately, those cattails.
They're not cattails. They're not
cattails.
So last we heard they were cattails. So hopefully if they're not, that's great. If they're not, that's great.
They are not cattails.
Okay. Well, let's pick a number. I mean, I don't really know, but if it's another 50,000, then we're adding that to the request of that becomes 1,250,000. And then of that 50,000 we've added with another 12,500 would go on the match.
My recollection from Thursday was the supply and install was closer to 250 than 350. Who else? You said you were talking to other lighting manufacturers besides Penglobe to get these numbers.
No, I have not. I've gone back to Penglobe. At this point, they're the only one.
Just Penglobe.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misheard you earlier. I'm sorry.
Yeah. We could probably go back and get some of this, you know, before we actually, but that's going to be the sort of order of magnitude that would have to go in the grant request.
So, Roger, this is Gino. Just so that I'm following correctly, these so the prices that you have on the slip or on the attachment here comes out right to 1.2. Now right. You'll submit that part of the grant, and then if it's accepted, the city's responsibility is 25% of that, correct?
Correct.
So what the Board of Aldermen has to do is vote on the 25% match, right, Mr. Mayor? And if we get the if we get the grant, where is that money going to come from? The 25%. Could we use ARPA funds for that?
Roger.
Yes, that was the intent. Yeah. I mean, we currently have, I don't have today's number, but it's over $2.5 million left in the ARPA funds. Even if we were getting the 500,000 that we pre-allocated to the parking garage. So, you know, I'm not trying to push this, but the ARPA funds are use it or lose it, you know, and it runs right out at the end of next year. So,
and then if we get the grant, Roger, then this all needs to go out to bid, right?
Yes, it would.
Because the grant doesn't just approve, you know, this pricing from this vendor. So we still would have the bid process to go through and all of that, correct?
Right. I mean, essentially what we're asking for here is for the board to approve us applying for the grant.
Okay.
Right, Dick. Mr. Mayor, Charlie Sampson.
Yes, sir.
So only because I've gotten several grants from the city in various jobs that I held within the city, which can't really be called jobs because they were all volunteer. But so Roger, just to correct one thing, when we get a grant, the grant doesn't go into anybody's budget per se. The grant has to go into its own line items.
Yes.
In the overall budget so that it can be tracked.
That's right.
This application, once approved by us, goes forward. If it comes back at that time, when it comes back, this board gets to then decide whether or not to accept it. So it will come back in front of us again if it is awarded to us, at right. which time we can decide where the 25% matching funds would come to. I'm 110% behind you going out and trying to get any grant that you can, sir. and believe that this is a good idea. And I think that the people who use the Greenway, like Barbara and myself, I am out there, Barbara, even though you don't see me, believe that that's a perfect place to be utilizing these funds.
Well, thank you. I mean, there is always a possibility that we won't get the 1.2 million we're asking for, because that tends to happen from time to time. But, you know, that's what we're pitching for.
And Roger, could they, our request is 1.2 million. Can they give us a million, or do, if they don't approve our 1.2, are we out of the, are we out of the grant?
We then have to make a decision whether we do all of the things we put there, you know?
Okay. So they could approve us for less if they
could.
Okay.
I think the chances are pretty good. I mean, because we're right at the bottom end of the scale, between 1 and 10 million.
And plus it's only distressed communities involved in this grant, correct?
Right. Right.
Okay.
And there's only 25 of them in the state.
Right.
Roger, Brian Capullo here. So now I'm a little confused with the actual physical rebuilding of the fence. Are the split rails themselves going to be powdered metal?
Essentially,
so the post and the rails.
It would be the posts and the rails, right?
Okay.
So that'd be pretty much a permanent replacement. You know, right now, those wooden fences, you know, there are parts missing. They rot away, you know, they get painted and they get broken. This is going to be a pretty robust fence that would last, you know, probably 15, 20 years.
Okay. Thank you. Just trying to clarify here.
Yeah, I think the plan is to make it in of aluminum. And so it won't be too heavy to, you know, put in place. And the ones that I've heard about and talked with them would be powder coated to whatever color we choose, you know.
Any other questions?
Before we go ahead, I would like to add that $50,000, because that was the number that Ed Armino had thrown out before he decided to try to freeze them out. To try to have those invasive plants removed from Wittig Park. So I'd like to have that added if possible.
Sure. Right. So that would just, you know, add 50 to the total and 12 and a half to the match.
Now, Rob, a question for you. Where exactly are these invasive plants in the water? Are they able to get them from shore, or are we going to have someone with a boat and an actual weed tiller out there?
They are along the shore. However, they're going out deeper and deeper every year. Public Works did have a backhoe out there a couple of years ago to clean out the fishing area, but they couldn't get the backhoe in next to the up against the wall.
Okay. So do you think that there would be a possibility that we would need a third party to actually, you know, dive down and remove some of this stuff? Because I know that
absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rob and Brian, if you remember back, I think, who did it from the other side of town? He came up there, they lowered the water down. They dug the hole. Ed McManus went in there. They lowered it and they dug the whole shorelines out. But that had to be, Ron, do you remember that? That had to be 20 years.
Yeah, that's at least 15 years ago,
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the type of job it's going to be, right?
But this is a great start.
I was just wondering if $50,000 was going to be an adequate amount to tackle a project like that.
Yeah, it's basically lowering it and digging it out, hauling it out, so... I mean, I don't know what the numbers were 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, but.
Yeah, we got a quote between 40 and 60,000, which is why I put in 50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Yeah. Just as long as we could use that as kind of like a case study or a, you know, kind of a precursor to what.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Right. Good idea, Rob. That's perfect. It's got a lot of use up there, so keep it going. Any other discussion? John, for this motion, Roger, the authorization to apply for it, how do you want to word it?
I think that's pretty straightforward. Authorize Roger to apply for that on behalf of the city of Derby.
All right, do I have a motion?
So move, Charlie Sampson.
Second, Gino.
Gino, any more discussion?
Oh, just reiterate, what's the exact amount, Roger?
If we add the 50,000 for Wittig, it would be the grant request would be 1,250,000. And the
plus our 300,000 and change match. So it's total of 1.550, right?
50. That's right. Yep.
Okay.
So the motion could state that full amount and also specify that that's the match amount that's being authorized.
Any other discussion?
Well, that matches less from the figure.
Right.
All right, I just wanted to echo the comments regarding how this is listed on the agenda both Thursday and today. Greenway lighting and security presentation, discussion, and possible action says, and the documents that were given to us said nothing about us taking action to apply for a grant using ARPA funds. Zero. We got zero indication that this is what we were being tasked to do.
Mr.
And
Mayor,
that is not appropriate. And so I ask again, you know, that we be supplied with, accurate information, on social media, multiple people thought we were just voting on lighting on the Greenway, and that is not what we were being asked to do, but how would we know?
Well, Charlie.
Mr. Mayor, Charlie Sampson. Once again, this is a Greenway application. This is an application for a grant.
Understood. That's not what is put on.
Sarah, I have the floor. Can I finish my statement, please? When the grant comes back, if accepted and granted to us, at that time, the board gets to vote on accepting the grant and defining where the funding, match funding comes from. So even though Roger brought up ARPA funds, this board at that time can decide if it wants the grant and if so, where the funding is coming from. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. It's just the opportunity to go. So, any other discussion?
Well, I just want to put on the record that my vote will be no, because I don't believe that the agenda is clear and based on the motion. That's it.
Thank you. All right. So, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye, Barbara, to the motion.
Anybody else? All right, hearing done. Thank you. 7, Fire Marshal Office Reorganization. John, can you jump on that real quick?
Is the official issue that we have coming back to us from last week?
Yes.
So I want to let the board know, we ended last meeting with a little bit of confusion. We had the fire marshal on the line, and we raised some issues about, making sure we were on the same page in terms of what is the actual draft ordinance that he intended to recommend before the board. So I had met with him this morning after I reviewed the drafts that Barbara, Alderman DeGennaro, marked up for us. And in my discussion with him, I basically came to an ordinance that sort of pulls everything together based on his recommendations, sent that along to the board through, I believe, Walter, along with Barbara's markup so that everyone can see everything, the final version that's before you, and also the marked up versions that Alderman DeGennaro had put together for us. The departure, I think, in two different areas from what this board talked about, but what he is recommending are as follows. Number one, the idea that those sort of assistant positions, I'll say, the deputy and the fire inspectors, are approved by him directly and not through the Board of Aldermen. And this, as he explained to me, the intention here is so he could act without delay if he needs to fill these positions momentarily. He explained that it may not be the same individual. There may be a need to bring in a fire inspector from another community if one is not available. These things are not necessarily something that's, you know, set and go for several months. There may be a need that occurs, you know, day to day, hour to hour, where he doesn't want to get tripped up by red tape. And I've asked him to be here today to explain that to the board. The other area is to state the actual hourly amounts. And essentially, this was more of a matter of convenience. He thought it would be beneficial to pull everything together into the same document. I did explain that really the Board of Aldermen could act by salary resolution and it would have the same effect. But I think all things being equal, it's just as easy for the board to act on a resolution as it is to act on an ordinance. In this case, under the charter, if those hourly rates are in the actual ordinance, it does no harm to allow the public to see very clearly what the maximum amount is. And I would note that we converted all of these to hourly positions, to hourly payments. I believe the deputy it can work up to no more than 19 and a half hours. So if the fire marshal so desired, this could be basically a part-time position. The other two positions are really conceived of as being per diems, where they're going to be paid hourly for the work they do. So these are certainly not salaried positions. And again, he explained to me, you know, there may be an instance where one week he's using one fire inspector, but the other, because of logistics, he has to bring in a new fire inspector. He doesn't want to go through the process of having to basically act as if these are brand new hires, right, that have to be confirmed by the Board of Aldermen and have separate salaries appointed. Other than that, I made all the other changes that Alderwoman DeGennaro had pointed out, making sure we have the alderman.
I can go later if you want to wait.
And I think if our fire marshal here is here, he could expound a little further on our discussion.
Yes, I'm here. Everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So the attorney explained it quite well. You know, I kind of wanted to put a dollar per hour for each position just so there's a point of reference. And again, if it's an emergency appropriation, let's say, unfortunately, myself or a deputy has a health condition or an injury, you know, I don't have to go out to the board and come to the board and ask for a request or for a replacement. The money's already there and the dollar's already established. For the fire marshal, again, he is technically the part-time employee. His hours are determined. For the fire inspector and life safety code inspectors, they're being paid based on a dollar per hour, according to my budget, at $26 an hour. That's basically 8 hours a week. But there's got some flexibility to it because they may not be able to put, because a lot of them have other jobs, put in the 8 hours a week. So their pay would be based on my recommendation, but not alone. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, unethically say, well, this is how much you're going to get paid this much because this is what I think you did. I expect, and I know what their job responsibilities are. I know the number of hours that they have to put in and what they typically put in, that I should have the ability to just to approve their monthly paycheck, unless there is some outside considerations where for some reason they got hurt and they could not put in 8 hours a week. But that's something that I think, you know, there does need some to be some oversight, which I think it should be between the mayor, myself, and either the chief of staff or anyone else he decides to put in this like a review board, if you will. So, you know, no, not one person is making a financial decision on any other one person. I took a lot. I saw what the commissioner crossed out and added in. A lot of it was verbiage. Some of it was grammar, my fault. But I think that the final draft has all the intents and that she required. And again, the one big sticking point so far has been whether we put dollars in or not. I thought it was best for at least to state a dollar per hour rate and then let the go rest go as needed and as available. So far, you know, we're not operating under this ordinance right now, but it's been working fine. You know, unofficially, we're not working under this right now, but as far as assigning people assignments and making sure that they have hours in, it's working incredibly well. So my proposal is to, or my hope is to ask the Board of Aldermen to pass this final ordinance as is written.
Thank you, Dave.
It's Barbara. I just wanted a couple comments about this ordinance that came redrafted today,
yes,
as indicated. And this is to the board. This is to Attorney Marini as well. First off, I believe pursuant to state statute 29-297, the appointment for any fire marshal, fire inspector, fire safety code inspector has to come from the legislative authority, which is us. So that was changed, that the fire marshal would make the appointments. That was the first thing I saw. The second thing I saw was that, you know, again, it's my feeling about the way the dollar number is in there. But if we're going to put, you know, and I'm not saying this has to happen, this is just how it came out to me. If you're putting in dollar numbers in the 32-70, then why aren't you putting the salary in for the fire marshal? And fire marshal was spelled wrong in 32-70 in a couple spots. But, you know, and just to just make a comment as to what Dave just indicated, you know, the salary was subject to, and the proposal, what was on the books and in my draft, that the salary is subject to the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen approval. So there's your oversight as well. So, you know, so those are my comments. This board can do whatever, you know, whatever they wish by my document that, but I do think that 29-297 is controlling in that section 3268 of the appointment.
Thank you, Barbara.
Yeah, and then I just noticed where you that's a common error with two L's. I just picked that up myself. Mm-hmm. Now, thanks for bringing that my attention. Yeah, fire marshal is spelled with one L, not two.
Yeah, the original had more two L's in it, which is of course the fire and not the and not the fire marshal.
Yeah, that would be like the fucker van. So.
All right, so the had a lot of two L's in it.
This is Gino DiGiovanni, Mrs. DiGennaro, the draft that you wrote up was from us as an entirety, a whole, from the meeting, not Thursday meeting, but the meeting before that, as we discussed it, you know, amongst ourselves at that meeting. So these were the changes that, you know, we all kind of agreed on, and you drafted it and to try to help Dave out. Am I right on that? Right, Mrs. Deitch?
That was my understanding. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. I just want to make sure that I'm on the same page. That's all. Zoom's a little difficult.
This is Sarah. I agree with you, Gino. That is, you know, everybody was on the same page with that. I thought all of us. So with that, I would make a motion to approve this document with Ms. DiGennaro's edits, which were taken from our previous board meeting.
Do I have a second?
Yes,
well, I think you need to specify those, but you know, that goes back with the hiring and the salary in there and everything. I think you need to specify exactly what we're all going to vote on. And I understand where you're coming from, Barbara, and Gino, and this and that, because a lot of power keeps coming away from the Board of Aldermen. And I would give Dave the right, in an emergency basis, to appoint who he needs at any time. But I think that with general hiring and the salary should be the way we talk about.
You got that, John?
I just want to make sure that, you know, the fire marshal certainly cannot be appointed without confirmation of the board of aldermen, alderwomen. That's right. Definitely in compliance with state statute. And right. It's an important check and balance. Again, it's based on his recommendation and I think good practice. We do want to be careful. We don't want to put him in a position where he can't simply reach out and bring another inspector on board without having to go through a board of aldermen meeting. You know, that may not be, you know, he may be in a situation where he needs to bring someone in before he's able to officially make an agreement with them to act as an inspector. And I believe, and again, I'm deferring to him as the professional who, you know, is seeing this day to day. I believe he may be encountering this more often than I think is realized. And, you know, Fire Marshal, you can go ahead and kind of explain, you know, the reality of, you know, is this something that comes up once a year? Or something that you really have to be concerned about, you know, getting an inspector in when you need them.
I think that sums it up, unless anybody has any other questions.
Mr. Marshall, yes, in your words, do you think that this is a life safety issue? If we adopt it and I forget if it was you or someone else said the term red tape. Is this a life safety issue if we adopt it as is with the edits? That's to say that we do not put in the dollar amount.
I don't think I used the term red tape. That wasn't my term.
No. Okay.
And the dollar amount, you know, again, yeah, I mean, it's everything here is a life safety. I explained that to last Thursday night. I mean, we are way behind in our multifamily inspections. I'm finding disastrous conditions out there.
Okay, Mr. Marshall, I understand that, but just to clarify, is it a life safety issue or is it dangerous for us to adopt this edit with not including the numbers? That was my exact question.
Okay. Is it dangerous? I don't know if I would call that dangerous. I would just call it setting up a baseline that even if somebody else comes to this new, says, you know, where did this number come from? Well, here it is in the ordinance. You know, dangerous, that's a little severe. I don't know if I'd use that term.
I don't think any danger is being alleged on the salary portions of this. But in terms of the fire inspector, you know, I'm looking at the language cited by Alderwoman DeGennaro. I think, as explained by the fire marshal, the deputy fire marshal is likely going to be more stable, right? When you're going to appoint the deputy fire marshal, it's likely there's only going to be one. So if the ordinance is changed to have that be approved by the Board of Aldermen, I don't really see if that satisfies, you know, the board. I don't really see an issue with that at all. I think that could only be a positive thing. But for those fire inspector positions, the two lower ones at $26 per hour, I would highly, highly recommend that the fire marshal be given discretion to appoint them as needed without going back to the board, because I could see that being that life safety issue where he may need to bring on an inspector in a matter of hours and not have time to go back to the board. I would say that, yeah, maybe a fire, the deputy, I could see going to the Board of Aldermen. There's certainly likely time to do that. If you're going to bring someone on as a deputy, that's not going to be a last minute decision. That's not going to be a temporary decision. So I would recommend that if the board changed the ordinance, you change only the deputy portion to being subject to Board of Aldermen approval. Leave the
Now that I understand your question, I agree.
Attorney Marini, we have an intermunicipal agreement, I believe, with the Valley for
we do.
Coverage for fire marshals.
Yes.
And what is there? Is all the Valley towns close to the same rate for hourly rate, or how does that work?
We have an interlocal agreement with most towns, Valley towns, I think with all of them. One of the issues has been that, you know, in order for that to work, you need to be sworn in by the state as a fire marshal for each town. We've been operating out of that realm for years. For an example, a Shelton or an Ansonia fire marshal was never sworn in officially as a fire investigator or fire inspector for the city of Derby. Now, that does not cost us any mean, but liability-wise, they're out of jurisdiction. If it's not sent to the state in writing that this person is now officially associated and affiliated with the city of Derby, and they're doing fire investigations, and there's nobody from Derby there, they're operating out of jurisdiction.
Well, that's not specked out in the operating agreement between all local towns?
No, it's not. It's part of the state statute. And that's been going on for years. And that was one of the things I picked up. I'm like, we can't function like this. It's almost like being a police officer in Derby and going to New Haven and making an arrest. You don't have that authority. So we straightened that out. I got sworn in Ansonia, Seymour. They all came and got sworn in for us. So now it's, you know, it's legit, it's legal. But that was something that was lacking.
So I guess my question is, in the agreement here on 32-70 C, it says that a fire inspector shall be paid $26 an hour. If we have an inner city throughout the valley, an agreement, and you need to call somebody from a different town, we have $26 an hour. That inspector gets paid $26 an hour. What if the other city charges more, or however the agreement is?
The agreement is written that every town covers their own expense. So if I have to bring in a Sonya fire marshal,
yep,
the town of Sonya is going to pay them.
And where and how does Derby pay them? And if so, we don't pay them. Oh, no. Okay, I got you. Okay, no. I understand how it goes.
That's one of the reasons why I need to get a list of available and qualified fire investigators. So if I'm not around and they ask for help, now we could send somebody there to represent Derby, to assist them, have a Derby presence, and there's money in the budget for it. So that's,
yeah, so he needs flexibility for the inspectors, not the deputy fire marshal or the fire marshal per se, but the inspectors part, right?
The cover, to be honest with you, is more for fire investigation, you know, because that's what most likely going to happen. If there's a life safety code and I'm not around, and it could usually wait until Monday, let's say, you know, but fires, they happen all the time at different times. You know, so there's no guarantee that everybody is going to be around, at least all two of us, when a fire comes in at any town, even ours.
But the fire marshal, the fire marshal and the deputy marshal, they, you know, having that approved by the board of aldermen, alderwomen, that's really not the issue. It's really just allowing those other, the lower positions to be.
Right. So the issue is more with the inspections, not the investigators, as in the fire marshal or deputy, right? Am I following that right?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Okay.
And the inspectors work under the marshals.
Yeah, and Barbara, I'm looking at the statute. The statute would only govern really marshals and deputies anyway, so there wouldn't be any question at all.
Well, that's not how I read it. That's not how I read it. That's what I was just going to say. I'm looking at it myself. Shall appoint a local fire marshal and such fire marshal, comma, fire inspectors and other fire code inspectors or fire investigators as may be necessary. It comes from the we don't have a fire board of fire commissioners. We don't have a fire district. Our legislative body is us. So that's how I read it, that everybody, all those positions need to be appointed by the board. But obviously, it could by the recommendation of the fire marshal. But I disagree with your
reading of
the statute.
Yeah, I'm looking at a version that has fire marshal and such deputy fire marshals as may be necessary, that does not have a reference to inspectors. 79 or 29 297. Fire 2012.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to vote with you on this fire.
What thing, John? I missed the end of what you said.
I'm 29, section 29, 297, amended 2012.
There's a later one. Public Act 21-165. That was the last.
I mean, if the Board of Aldermen is voting on these, right, and deferring, and it is basically deferring that discretion to the fire marshal, you're doing it by ordinance. So you are acting. Your legislative body is acting.
I'm going to
have the ability to defer that to him.
With the state statute.
Acting on the ordinance, though, you are deferring that authority properly to him because you are the board that has the ability to do that. I'm just saying with those two lower positions, you know, it puts him in a better position to be able to make that call without having to. I mean, I don't know if he's going to need an inspector to come in the afternoon and he doesn't have one available. Is he going to have a Board of Aldermen meeting scheduled in an hour's notice? He's not going to be able to.
Well, he could get one from another city, right?
Get a list. Yeah.
Or no.
You can have a list.
I can't count on that. They have their own.
That's for Gino. The municipal agreement is for emergencies for fires, major incidents in the city of Derby.
So it's not for inspectors.
No.
Okay. Otherwise, he has to have his own list.
Investigators.
And he has to have his own list and phone numbers.
And I think you're missing another point here when you start referring to investigators. And inspectors, there are three levels. There's fire marshal, deputy fire marshals, and fire inspectors. We are all certified to the same level. What it comes down to is your rank and position. I got hired as a fire marshal. However, my fire inspectors and my deputy fire marshal has the exact same training and qualifications as I have. So you're not, you know, when you start saying, well, are we bringing in an inspector or a fire investigator? They're one and the same. They're just a level of where they sit. Fire departments are usually very paramilitary. So it's where you sit on a hierarchy. I know Derby's a little different because we're separated from the fire department, but there is no difference in training and qualifications between a fire inspector and a fire marshal.
Okay.
So whoever I bring in can be both. I can bring the same person in to do a fire investigation and then bring them in the next day to do life safety codes because they're all trained to the same level. So I don't know if that confused you or clarified things.
All right, John, where are we at with this motion now? Was Sarah?
Let's move the question.
Yes. So we had Sarah, and who seconded it? Was it Gino or Barbara?
No, I seconded it, Barbara.
Barbara did. Okay. So
my version.
Mrs. D. It wasn't me.
All right. So, John, what's the exact motion going to be, please?
I think Barbara had the motion.
Yes. Or Sarah.
Sarah made the motion.
Yes. Sarah made the motion with Barbara's additions to it or adjustments to it.
The proposed changes, it's the
proposed changes.
The document, the BLD doc on 414.
Okay.
Can I just ask one question because I wasn't at the last meeting, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So I'm looking at Ms. DeGennaro's document here, and all I'm seeing is a lot of CBLD's doc. What's BLD's doc?
I think to clarify what the motion that you're really looking at is, if you look at the final version, it's that modified to have the Board of Aldermen and Alderwomen approve of both the deputy and the inspectors, right, and investigators. That's the one change. And then the second change is I believe that you're motioning to remove the salaries. I think those are the two housekeeping issues, other than taking away that L from the one errand marshal or the two errand marshals that ended up being in there.
That's not the motion I'm seconding. I don't think that's the motion Sarah made. Sarah, there were two documents. There was the document that I presented on Friday, which is was sent again today by the chief of staff in a PDF format. And then there was the PDF that came from Corporation Counsel, the fire marshal. So they're not the same. You can ask Sarah what her motion is.
But just to clarify for Mr. Sampson, BLD is Barbara L. DeGennaro, proposed changes in bold 414. That's the one document.
Okay. And then I have a Microsoft Word document for fire marshal, which I believe Alderman DeGennaro alluded to with the incorrect spelling.
That was the one that was sent by Corporation Counsel.
Okay.
And that is the one that I am looking to propose.
Okay.
But so from the maker of the motion, though, which one are you talking about?
The Word doc.
The BLD doc. The PDF version, yes.
Just for the record, so we're clear, because I can't. The one that says BLD proposed changes in bold 414-23, and it was date stamped at 149 on April 17th. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And then Barbara seconded. Any more discussion?
All right. So this is Brian Capola. Just for clarification here, we were talking about previously about creating some sort of merger of the two documents before, correct? Mr. Marini, you were saying we were talking about having the marshal, the deputy marshal salaries posted and not having the salaries posted and then having the hourly to be set up for right? Wasn't that what we were discussing?
The version that I submitted had the hourly posted, but I believe the one that's being proposed now does not, has that stricken.
I believe it's the document that's in our packet. It says 7A on it.
Is it in the Word document?
No.
The Word document is the most recently drafted, and the PDF contains that Barbara marked up.
Right. And I think the Word document is a combination of the one that Barbara marked up and what I'm presenting.
Correct. Except I believe that what's being proposed is to take that document and to further, number one, put the inspector and the code inspector, right? Safety code inspector and fire inspector under the recommendation of appointment of the Board of Aldermen, right? To make that change. And also, I believe there's a proposition to take away the hourly rates, to take those out. I would defer to the maker, Sarah, of the motion as to whether that's correct.
Is that your motion, sir, as we're doing the Board of Aldermen meeting?
Say that again, Ron.
As
it is, the motion is the document, the PDF that we received with the BLD, the changes.
From Barbara, right? Okay.
Correct.
All right. Correct. Got a motion and a second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye, Barbara.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Mr. Mayor, Charlie, I'm just going to abstain from this one because it just isn't. It isn't an ordinance that's written so that people can read it and know what it says. There's a lot of notes next to it. So I'll abstain.
No,
that's not the one.
Charlie, there's a cleaned up version of.
I don't have it.
It's on the it's on the website.
Okay. Well, I get everything via the email and I don't have anything that's the final version.
Yeah, no, there's nothing that should be marked up.
And
that we're discussing tonight.
Are you there?
All right. So what I have, Mr. Mayor, is seven in favor. I'm sorry, six in favor and one abstention.
Should be.
That's missing a person.
It should be seven and one. Nobody said no, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Sampson's here now. I was looking at the first list. So yep. I'm here. Sorry. Seven in favor and one abstention.
Perfect.
And Mr. Mayor, it's Charlie Sampson, if I could just 10 seconds. Marshall, all you need to do now is come back to us with a piece of paper with the people on it and the salary rate that you want. It's much easier to change it at that level than it is to change it in an ordinance, because now you're going to have people on the board who don't understand the ordinance and want to go back and revisit the whole ordinance again. Just come to us with the salaries you want.
When I need it.
What I said last week in the email. And at the meeting last week. You missed Charlie.
Yeah, my apologies. I had to work.
Okay, that was easy.
All right. So that's all set. So we're moving on.
This ordinance. Are we coming back to this ordinance with the corrections?
No, I think it's pretty well done.
He's going to make the corrections on it. Send them out when they're done, John. So they all see.
I think there's pretty much a clean version. We'll have that ready to go to the clerk's office.
Okay. Thank you. Number eight, tax refunds. Motion to accept.
So moved. Is that still the $10,450.04?
I didn't get anything else.
Okay.
Second,
Rob.
Rob, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'm hearing none, so carried. Thank you. Generator donation to the fire department. We have a motion to accept.
I'll make a motion, Mr. Mayor. Gino, did
you? Gino, second.
I'll second it. Brian Capola.
Brian Capola, any discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, so carried. Let's see. Sterling Opera House committee names. I wanted to bring this up. I'm excited about announcing the city's next step to the vital restoration project, development of the Opera House redevelopment. And as many of you know, the Derby Opera House is a colorful, historical, significant past. Now it's time to ensure we promise the future for the structure. Tonight, I'm asking to take an initial step of appointing five people to the official City of Derby Sterling Opera House Restoration Committee to work with me and my administration to begin the process of moving this initiative forward. The initial persons are as followed: Dana Florenza, Anthony Mullins, Daniel Blitzman, Brian Capolo, and Gino DiGiovanni. I will be scheduling the first public meeting shortly between the committee and the city staff to get up to speed on where this project has been and where it can go. So I wanted to bring you guys up to date that the committee has started. I point to some people. We can continue. I wanted to keep it small right now so we can really get together and start moving this project forward to get the information out there. I encourage the public to join any meetings that we have. And then I would love to expand this once we get our foot in the door and we're able to see what was done prior to this, which we've been researching. And I like to reenact a lot of that stuff. So I just wanted to give the board a heads up on that.
Mr. Mayor, it's Barbara. Can you just read the names again that were not our Board of Aldermen members or Mr. Blisman, because the document that we got had out-of-state people. So exactly. I just was trying to pull it up. Okay.
Right, exactly. I wanted to keep it locally. Initially, those came up. They were interested in really joining, but I really like to keep it more into the valley, more closely knit with Derby. And I want to get the people in Derby that have the history of this to be able to put their influence in this. So I want to keep it within Derby residents.
All right, so who were they? That Dana Florenza, was that?
She's
give
local.
Give me those first few names. Yep, give me the first three names that you said.
Dana Florenza, Anthony Mullen. We got Daniel Blitzman, who was on the PNZ.
Planning and zoning.
And then we have Brian and Gino from Alderman. So within the elected officials and the city staff, and we have a couple local residents I think it'll be a great opportunity to get some things started, move forward from where we start. They had some things several years back. I think the Stafiri administration, the Gatto administration, when they had some state initiatives going on. So I'd like to rejoin that. So those are the people that are going to be on it. We will announce a meeting shortly on this. Got something to say? Mark, was that you?
Yeah, it was me. Oh, no, I was not muted, but I have a lot to say, but I don't want to extend this meeting.
Okay. So we're going to move on to 11, WPCA privatization final report update discussion. We received a letter from Aquarion that this letter is to formally withdraw our effort or our offer to acquire the water waste system of the city of Derby. We have determined that the action is appropriate following Derby WPCA privatization committee. In conclusion, it's a full page letter. We will send it out to the rest of to the board if you didn't get it yet. That in conclusion, we thank the city of Derby for its effort in evaluating the Aquarion solution. We're disappointed, but we hope everything works out good. So Aquarion has withdrawn their intent to purchase WPCA. So Jack, did you, is Jack still up there?
Yeah.
Did you get a copy of that?
Mr. Mayor, that just came in today.
I just got it on my desk when I came in this morning.
Okay.
And today's what, the 17th? This was dated the 14th. And that's how I had it on my desk today. I don't know. Jack Walsh, are you up there?
I'm here.
Did you get a copy of that letter or no?
I got it Friday.
You got it Friday? Okay. All right, so I mean, there's no really discussion on the WPCA part of it. They went through it. So, other than that, we can go to number 12.
Ron? Is that me?
That's you, sir.
Motion to adjourn, 8:24.
Okay, you have a second?
Second, Charlie Sampson.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Everybody have a great night.
Have a good night.
Thank you.